Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
I'm Leo in London.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us, whoever you are and wherever in the world you are. We hope you'll find something of interest and connection here.
But what about, you know, when else does that actually come up? Socially, publicly, outside of essentially our work and our practices, which I include this podcast yes. in, outside of that, what experience do you have of having to make that decision? Do I tell this person that I'm autistic or not? The obvious one that's come up for us recently is that I have the sunflower lanyard. So every time I fly here, I wear it. And that's that's an ID card on a very loudly coloured lanyard around my neck, which has three words on the front. I am autistic.
But people don't know you. So I guess there's the thing of it's different to disclose depending on your relationship with the other people.
I thought about that because the lanyard has been a thing and it's brand new. To me, is that I've only ever used it to come to see you, and that's always been on my own. And would I wear it if I were with friends or family or my wife? I think my wife, I definitely would. That's not a problem. But family and friends, probably, well, no, certainly not, I think. Oh, I really don't know. Now I'm really stuck in a dilemma in my head because, so my fantasy is, I would be wearing the lanyard and the people who know me were going, what on earth are you doing that for? You're not disabled. You don't need special accommodations.
Or we're with you.
You're a normal
and we'll look after you,
or that, but I know, but I don't think that the distress would just figure as a thing. And if I were to point it out by saying I need to do these things in a special way,
yes.
and that's why I have this lanyard, it's only fantasy. How can I know if this would be true or not? That people would think I was taking the piss, exaggerating, or the old chestnut making a fuss.
Yeah, so
we can do it. We know you can. You've done it before.
We've seen you do it.
Yeah, we've seen you do it. Yeah.
But do you remember that time that you put a post up intending it only to be on the podcast page, but it went on your personal Facebook profile?
Oh, it did, didn't it? Yes.
And I said something to you about it. I think what I noticed was how many people liked it.
Yes.
And it was that I didn't realise whether you had intended for that to happen or not at that point. But I noticed how many people liked it. And I think my comment was, oh yeah, 20 people within an hour like that. I mean, that's brilliant, but you know, two people like our podcast, you know, so it's like, you know, but for you that felt potentially exposing.
Yes, so that was unintentional, very much unintentional. I would never have posted me with a lanyard saying I am autistic on my own page. And there you go, there's a really good illustration. I think I took it down, in fact, didn't I? I can't remember.
Or you just worked out that it had happened automatically, like Facebook had made the decision, but it was only meant to be for
professional. I think it's because I posted as myself or something.
Yeah.
Whatever, yeah, and what it, you're right, actually, that's a really good example, because it wasn't actually, what I'm talking about now isn't necessarily that particular incident, but it's what it exposed to me about my discomfort.
Yeah.
You know, so I will post, I almost always post new episodes of this podcast onto my personal Facebook
page. Yeah.
So people, I mean, everybody who cares to have a look, if it comes up, knows that I'm autistic and that I present this podcast with you. So I'm out in that respect. But there was, so why was that different?
Well, 20 people liked it and only two people liked the podcast.
One was about an episode which got almost no reaction. And then there was a photograph of me with the lanyard talking about my special accommodations, and loads of people did a like on it. People in my personal life.
People in your personal, mostly men as
well. Do you remember that as well?
I told you that.
You did. I need to go back and review that, because now we're talking about
disclosure. You can't, because you deleted
it. I know.
And there was poor people, like some people have made comments as
yes.
well. This sounds like it's not something that I don't normally stalk your Facebook page. Let's just put that out. Say that. But it was really striking. I think because 20 people or 20 odd people had liked it, for some reason that was giving it traction and people were commenting. So it like, when I went onto Facebook, it was there, you know?
Yeah.
I had to go looking to see, has Leo posted anything today? Mm-hmm. You know, mm. It was like there, and it was clearly a post that was getting responses and getting likes and loves and everything else.
And yet my reaction was, this shouldn't be here.
Get it down.
Rather than, as you were encouraging me to do, as I remember, to kind of really notice be it. Curious and appreciate and notice, exactly.
Yeah.
That this was getting positive responses.
A lot of strikingly positive responses from people who I don't know. I don't know all the names of people in your life. So. But what I do notice is there's men commenting and liking it. And I guess something in that must have been striking to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, a man coming out and saying I'm autistic is obviously, you know... And men liking it is also noticeable.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my you're right. Episodes posts are getting one.
Yeah, that's why I say like stop wasting your time.
Seven in one particular case, you know.
But I never put any of that on my personal feed. Well, I never really do anything on my personal feed. Let's be honest. But I just it would never cross my mind to put that, and I think that's a real. Like something that is really noticeable, like I just don't tell people about the podcast. I just don't.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, our listeners in Northern Ireland is very small, very, very, very small, like because it just hasn't been publicised. I don't do it. Also, in terms of disclosing my autism, so it's interesting because I think that the food thing is a really good example, food or travel. Are really good reasons for me to disclose. If anybody was traveling with me or was meeting me after I've traveled, you know, those people kind of know that and they need to know about the food, whether I try and hide why it is or if I was staying over. So like if I was doing training, because I remember the last training that I did away from home, loads of my training recently has been online and was during even like COVID stuff. I did all my IFS training during COVID. When I did my sample training, I went over to England for blocks of 4 days at a time. And I really struggled with that. And for the last two times, so there's some people, there's about a group of about 12. And I remember two of the women opted not to stay on site and they opted to get like an Airbnb or a guest house because they wanted to do that. They knew each other, they were friends. And the rest of us, by default, were staying in the place because that's what most people did. And for the last two blocks, I got my own place outside of it because they realised I needed to withdraw at the end of the day and have the evenings and sleep somewhere else and then come back the next day. And it felt really hard to do that, but I knew I needed to do that for my own experience. You know, I needed to do that, but it felt really hard, and it felt kind of like maybe I was insulting people or they didn't get it. You know, why would you do that? You know, if you don't want to be with us, just stay in your own room. You know, we had single rooms. You know, but I needed to be off. Site. And it was even too intense for me. I really struggled with lunch, you know, so being training and then eating in the same place. And it was also like there was a couple of those. I think the last two, there was like a July one and a September one. And in both of those ones, I was staying off site. But it was during that really, really, really hot, one of the really hot summers, I think it was 2018 or something. And it really nearly finished me off, the pressure of being in a hot room, having to have lunch, not being able to go off site. You know, it was so much. And even like the having the travel and feeling like my case was bigger than everybody else's because I didn't know what I would want to wear and I needed to bring all my comfort things and feeling so glaringly obvious in what I see now. Now, I was diagnosed that year, so I was beginning to know that I was autistic. I was diagnosed in, I think, in an October, November, which would have been just after my training, my last training session, which would have been the September of that year. So but I knew, you know, the autism was on my mind. And some of the experiences of why is this trip? Why are these trips so hard for me? And why, you know, some of that really helped me seeing it through the am I autistic kind of lens. Oh, I've just run out of what my main point was by going off on five different tangents.
Disclosing.
Nowadays, if I did anything like that, at the outset, I am autistic. Yeah. I have needs. Yeah. I will not be staying in the same place. I will not be eating the same stuff. You know, I will need certain breaks. You know, it would be like part of my introduction. These are brand new people. This is a new setting. This is who I am. And in fact, I have looked at doing program assistant for IFS training.
Oh, yes.
In fact, I didn't tell you this. They offered me one, but they didn't offer me the ones that I wanted to do were mostly online, but with maybe like 1 3- or 4-day stint in Bristol. And I was open to doing one three or four day stint in Bristol because what they do is they give you what they call a stipend. So they give you an amount and you don't have to stay in their hotel. You can stay in any hotel. You know, you get the same amount as everybody else, but you're not obliged to stay. And I thought, well, I can do one of those. Don't want to do four of those, but I can do one of those. But anyway, they came back and the one that they offered for me to be a part of is fully on site. So they would want me to be there four times or three lots of six or whatever it is. And it's too much for me. I cannot contemplate travelling three times and being away for big blocks of time, even though I wouldn't have to stay in the same hotel as everybody else. It's too much for me. It's too big an ask to go away it could be like 18 days. I think it might be 18 days. But you would be away the whole time. So it's not a hybrid, even though there's the flexibility of not having to stay in the same place. And in that case, it's all disclosed, like me being autistic, that's part of why they might want me, you know, they ask for things like that. So it would be out and it would be out right from the beginning. And I would negotiate whatever I needed out of that. And that would be, no matter what it was that I was doing, I would be saying that. But these are people that don't previously know me and there's never been any masking around them. So it's kind of easier in a way with them at this point in my life to start with I'm autistic and then let them meet me as an autistic person rather than people who have known me for 40 years. And then I say, actually, I need these things that I used to pretend I didn't need. That's different. And I would say, if someone nowadays starts talking to me about, for example, I think my child is autistic, I will very easily say, I'm autistic. I'll say that like in an advocacy way, and it might not be people that I know very well. So classic example is somebody who was doing work in my house. I've had so many people in and out of my house and, you know, someone saying then a workman and, you know, it was really quick that I said I'm autistic. And basically that gave me some credibility then to be able to have the conversation. And I have no qualms about doing that or, you know, what do you do? What kind of counselling do you do? I work with autistic people and I do that because I'm autistic. You know, I really like easily with new people and with those kind of public settings. But I guess that's very different than where potentially the question came from, which is how do you disclose to people who think they've known you their whole life?
And they
don't know this thing about you.
Once again, you're inside my head, speaking my thoughts. is that's just what I was coming to myself, is that that is the only barrier, really, are the people who've known me before. I don't have any problem. I can't think of a situation where I would socially or professionally, that goes without saying, because I'm so out professionally, but who might I meet socially who I would wish to conceal the fact that I'm autistic? I can't think of a scenario, but I can think of scenarios that involve people in my life who would, it's not that I would hide it from them. Everybody knows it's on my, you know, it is on my Facebook. It has appeared. But I don't really want to have conversations about it somehow because of my own prejudice that I will not be taken seriously or I'll be thought of as some kind of fraud or fuss maker. That's my prejudice there. And as I got that tiny glimpse into with that accidental Facebook post, that doesn't seem to be the case. So perhaps I should talk a little bit more personally, at least on the social medias, in my own personal life about it, rather than just, we've got a new episode of the podcast, which is safe as well, because one, it's professional, and two, it's not just me, it's me and you, and they don't know you mostly, and I might, there's something safer about that. I'm kind of somehow spreading the responsibility. No, it's not that.
No, it's true, though. It gives it credibility.
But here's another professional like me doing similar kinds of work, and they're also autistic, so it's okay for me to be autistic. You can believe me.
Yes, and they believe me. Shauna believes me, so there's some credibility.
I think so. I think if I had started a similar podcast on my own, which was a total possibility over the last few years, I've thought about it many times, that would have been, I needed that to be a collaboration for lots of reasons, actually. But this would be a very boring conversation if you were here. But that aside, there is something about feeling a relief in the fact that I don't need to prove anything. And that's the thing, isn't it? Proving to people who might not believe you.
And for me as well, it's that I don't want to explain. I don't want that to be a topic of conversation. I don't like to be under the spotlight. Don't want to place myself under the spotlight.
But again, I don't mind that if it's somebody new.
Yes.
Because we're doing a bonding thing anyway,
aren't we?
A relationship forming process that is fine. But to kind of reframe everything from somebody who's known you for decades, perhaps.
And also people who, I think the people that have known you for decades as well, they can take it personally in all sorts of ways.
Yeah,
so there is the issue that many of our people in the past, many people that we have known, been friends with, had relationships with, been particularly close or akin to in our work, are quite possibly undiagnosed neurodivergent themselves. And so it is potentially confrontational for those people to hear that we're autistic whenever they know that we're quite similar to them.
Yes.
And that then triggers an internalized ableism in, you know, quite a number of people, quite possibly.
Yes.
You know? Because many of us have, some of the people that have been the most significant to us are...
It's because
never named as such.
No.
And so people could feel quite threatened by that. But then we don't want to go into that territory because, you know, we also don't want to have to be faced with the ableism that might come back. Because sometimes the internalized ableism that comes back from neurodivergent people is more hurtful than the ableism that comes from people who really don't get it.
That's true. I can think of an example of it actually now. That makes sense, that is somebody that's denying me because they're denying themselves.
Yeah.
And that's actually very, yeah, that's worse.
Yeah.
Because these are the people who really should be accepting.
And get us that in the past we might have had really significant relationships based on perception of each other's similarity or quirks or whatever. I guess it must be the same, you know, if you come out as queer and you've got somebody who's closeted you know, it seems like that closeted person is harder on you.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Because you're a threat.
Because you're somehow
to their
secret. Yeah. And that you might see them in a way that they're not ready to see themselves.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So that I think that there is a whole bunch of people that feel that around those of us that are out.
And there's another lovely, you know, intersectionality with queerness, which I always enjoy. And it's not just that the language is similar, that the experiences are so interlinked.
Yeah.
You know, of exposure and self-confrontation and isms.
And you know, it's often easier for queer people to come out to the queer community and to new people rather than to
their families and friends who feel obliged to reframe everything when that's actually not always necessary anyway, because your relationship has been your relationship and the things you've experienced are things you've experienced. The only way that I think reframing in those relationships is useful is where things have not made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you made such a fuss when this happened? Oh, now I understand.
It could be really healing.
Because you're autistic. Right, now that makes sense. That's useful. Mm-hmm. But they don't have to go through everything.
Mm-hmm. And if there hasn't been a problem and they've just accepted you anyway,
then
it might be incidental.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, and I just want to always point to queerness, but, you know, if I was, you know, if I come out in terms of my sexuality now, it's not going to be relevant to a lot of people who know me.
Yeah.
It's not. It might have felt more relevant 30 years ago, but at this point, does anybody really care or need to know? So it's kind of the same thing. Like my friends, like, oh, well, you know, that's whatever. You know, if you want to make a podcast about your queerness, Shauna, go on ahead. But actually, it's not going to affect our relationship or our past or anything else. So I guess some people it's like that.
And I was going to say something else. So here's this is the other side. This is the other point, I suppose, that I'm aware of with disclosure, is that if there is no duty to do it either.
No.
And this is what you're saying as well. For so many people, it's irrelevant, and it could bring up conversations that I don't want to have, or put obstacles in the way of the relationship that I'm not interested in. I can make a value judgment about that risk.
Yes.
And one of those options is not to disclose. And I do not have an obligation, which, again, part of my, you know, autistic core values will tell me is that I have to be open and I have to be honest.
Yes.
And I do have to disclose. I have a duty to myself in terms of clarity and honesty, but I also have a duty to the community to model something.
Yeah.
And I don't, actually. Okay. There are, generally speaking, I would uphold those with my disclosures, but there will be, and I'm I suppose, again, just through this conversation, becoming more comfortable with the fact that the option to keep it to myself, it's mine, it doesn't belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to cause too much hassle or distress for me to disclose, I have that right.
Yeah.
And I think probably even if my core values were to jump up and say, you're being dishonest here, the other bits would also pop up and say, he's doing a fucking podcast. He's very, very publicly autistic. He's done his bit.
Yeah, and we don't feel the need to tell everybody all other things about ourselves.
Right.
We get to just talk about what's relevant that relationship at that time. Mm. And neither do they.
Mm.
You know, I don't have any right to... for any of my friends to disclose something that they have realised about their identity markers until or unless they feel so inclined to tell me.
Mm.
I guess that I also wanted to mention, though, there's a very real fear of rejection by association, whether that is, you know, the from an internalized ableism point of view, or whether that's, so in other words, that the person is neurodivergent themselves, or whether it's just that somehow it feels embarrassing or against, I don't know, against something, you know, this family is not autistic, so you can't be autistic. And that means that we are somehow not all professional, fully functioning adults, successful in the world, you know, and of course no one would say that, or, you know, even in a friend group, like we're not maybe all the same because you've got these hidden disabilities that you haven't said about or that you've covered up, or would people feel due to not understanding masking as an unconscious trauma response, see it as deliberately deceptive, and say that actually you've really had this air of authenticity about you, and you seem to be so open, but you hide this fundamental aspect of yourself, so what else are you hiding? And can I trust anything you say, or are you always diverting from this in how you're coming and going in life? Like, it could seem like it changes everything, and through those lenses could look like a really like an act of bad faith on the part of the autistic person for all of these years. And that could lead to rejection or being cancelled, which I guess is the more recent phrase. And I guess that I've realised that I do have a fear of, not a fear that leads me to stay in a closet and not do a podcast, clearly. And obviously, even though I don't publicise the podcast, it is findable, and for anyone who cares to search my name, there's been scenarios where, like, I've a few supervisees who have found the podcast due to searches for neurodivergent therapists or whatever, and it has somehow thrown up the podcast. So there's ways and means of people. Now, obviously, these people, they know me anyway, but I didn't tell them about the podcast, and I didn't, you know. So what I guess what I'm saying is that it's going to become more findable. It's going to come up, and people might search for one thing and be surprised to find that as well. So I'm obviously taking risks that mean that people can find out information at which may be unattractive to them, and which may lead to awkwardness and relationships not surviving, and that might not be my choice.
But the
risk of that is not greater than remaining closed down. But it is a very real risk. I guess anybody that becomes an advocate for anybody or for anything has that risk. You know, like, I've seen some people who do post publicly about things that could be seen politically as controversial, and that leads to some people silently blocking that person or removing that person from their newsfeed or their friend list. You know, people who engage in public protests about something or post about certain rights or political opinion. And you might know that thing about that person because they never told you about that thing, but they decide to post about it, and you realise, and sometimes that changes. People have a choice anytime we come out about anything, about whether that sits okay with them for whatever reason, that we're advocating for that thing or owning that thing or identifying ourselves with that thing.
We talked a little bit before we started recording about your higher level of caution about disclosure in your private life, and how I think you were saying I seem to be totally comfortable with just being an autistic person in public and my private life. But my question then was, I still have the novelty.
Yeah.
And the enthusiasm of novelty, I guess, which is enhanced and extended probably forever by my work, my client work. But also the other thing that occurred to me is you are more experienced as a diagnosed autistic person than me. You were diagnosed earlier than I was. And so it may also be that you're a few years ahead of me on the timeline of caution. And maybe these are things that I will learn through unpleasant experiences, potentially, that it's not necessarily a great idea to disclose without discernment. And maybe there are things that I look to you for to see how you're doing it and what rules, you know, kind of thing that you have. Or how much that it may just be a slower process.
Well, mine's much slower than yours, because you would have told a lot more people than I have told. And you've told a lot more people than your life. But I also had, with the first two people that I told, I had particularly negative experiences, and that clammed me up for years. So I think that it's not exactly what you're describing. It did take a long time for me to feel ready to say anything, and I didn't say anything before diagnosis. And then I mentioned to a couple of people, and both were decidedly unwilling to engage at all. It was as if the disclosure hadn't even happened, which was very invalidating, I guess. But there was also an air of, don't speak of this again. Even though it wasn't said, there was that kind of message. And I also am just remembering that I, at that time, sought advice from quite a well-known organisation, and the person that I spoke to advised me to think very carefully from a career point of view whether to say anything or not. They thought they were doing me a favour because they could see that I could potentially jeopardise being taken seriously if I was to go back into the workplace. And at that time I'd only just begun private practice. It was going well, but wasn't out as autistic then. I was seeing autistic people, but not explicitly. And they believed that they were doing me a favour by saying, be really, really discerning. And that seemed to match with the two reactions that I got as well.
Yes.
So I think it does, you know, things like that do make a difference. Now I could look back and I could go, there was so much ableism in that response, or in that person. Yes. But I didn't see that at the time, and did actually see that they were genuinely trying to help me, and they were genuinely, I mean, they were stuck in a high-functioning, low-functioning, medicalised model, of course.
Yes, okay.
And to them, I didn't need their services.
Right.
They didn't need them to find me a job.
Right.
Or, you know, and they couldn't do very much for me because I was supposedly functioning at a higher level. It makes me recognise, though, that this is a political move. And it does stand alongside what I was talking about, you know, people involved in particular protests that might seem radical to other people looking on. They might be like, well you don't have to
Well, what we are doing is a form of activism. And, I don't think that's stating it too strongly, because by being public and being quite vulnerable, which we are, I think, kind of increasingly bearing our professional lives in mind, then we do, A, give a direct validation to people who may be feeling very alone in their difference. But also, and I'd love to hear from anybody who's done or is doing this, you could play some choice episodes, couldn't you, to neurotypical people close to you to say, autistic people can sound like this. Autistic people can have careers like this, can communicate this way to each other and to the world, and don't necessarily sound awfully autistic.
Well, except we do.
Well, we totally do. We know that. But You know, there are some. There are lots of stereotypes, I think, that we can challenge kind of third hand. I would love to know if that ever happens, because that would make me very happy. Mm-hmm. If we were being used, you know, utilized in somebody's life in that way. Because mm-hmm. that's what I would do. That's what I would do. If I weren't me doing this, if I were a different version of me as a newly autistic person and I was facing a lot of barriers with people mm-hmm. taking me seriously mm-hmm. and saying you can't be autistic because mm-hmm. then a couple of episodes of Autistic License I think would be probably quite helpful for some people.
That's a nice thought. Thank you for staying with us.
Yes, thank you for being with us. And I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Overnight.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. And we spell license the British way, L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. Search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo or click on the link in the show notes.